Public News Service Wednesday afternoon update. I'm Mike Clifford. First, from the Sun Sentinel, Milton expected to come ashore within 40 miles north or south of Sarasota, with the potential to be one of the most destructive hurricanes on record for Florida. The potential landfall zone includes Tampa Bay, home to more than 3.3 million people, which has not endured a direct hit from a hurricane in more than 100 years. Forecasts call for Milton to be at least a Category 3 hurricane at landfall and remain a hurricane during its entire path across the state. Meantime, scientists in Maine are working to counter rising sea levels and stronger storms fueled by climate change by creating so-called living shorelines. We get more on this Manga Bay Solutions Journalism Maine News Service collaboration.
Designs can include buried Christmas trees to shore up dunes, bags of seashells to reduce erosion in mudflats, or salt-resistant grasses to stabilize nearshore areas. Peter Slavinsky with the Maine Geological Survey says traditional infrastructure like concrete and boulders have proven ineffective and costly.
More people than ever in the last couple of years call and say, hey, my bluff is eroding, but I don't want to do a seawall. What do I do?
Slavinsky says a state coastal property guide to reducing erosion is a good place to start. It's estimated 60% of Maine's working waterfronts were severely damaged by a trio of powerful storms last year, in which numerous seawalls failed. I'm Catherine Carley reporting.
Next to North Carolina, where Black women face alarming rates of life-threatening complications during childbirth.
Alexis Garrett says she witnessed this firsthand with a high-risk pregnancy in 2020. Referred to a high-risk clinic, Garrett recalls being overwhelmed by what she describes as poor communication during a critical moment when she was just 23 weeks pregnant.
They were looking to give me a cesarean. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, what? I gotta call my husband because I don't understand what you're saying.
Garrett is convinced her confusion and fear reflect a widespread problem that many Black moms face, being left out of essential conversations about their own health. She and Tia Hudson reporting.
This story, a Charlotte Post Pulitzer Center for Crisis Reporting, North Carolina News Service collaboration. And Metro Nashville Public Schools and Nashville State College are working together to help some high school students launch healthcare careers. They can take college courses and earn technical certificates in the field of central sterile processing. Dr. Santa L. Jackson is with the Nashville State Community College.
In the summer, they're actually going to have clinical experiences with area healthcare providers, and they will actually be able to sit for that exam and be well on their way to a career or come to Nashville State and finish their associate degree in surgical technology.
The state has provided a $2 million grant. The funds will be used to set up a sterile processing lab in a classroom and hire two new faculty members, one at each school. This is Public News Service. Immigration boosts the economy in Colorado across the U.S., but new policies are needed to maximize gains and make it harder for employers to abuse workers.
That's according to a new Colorado Fiscal Institute study, which found that each year, immigrants generate $54 billion in state economic output. Despite widespread claims that immigrants are coming to take jobs from U.S.-born Americans, Sophie Shea with the Institute says immigration actually increases opportunities for all Coloradans.
Research shows, study after study, that there are no fixed numbers of jobs in a state. When immigrants move to Colorado, the economy grows. That doesn't mean fewer jobs. It means more jobs.
More than 500,000 Colorado immigrants work in low-wage, middle-wage, and higher-wage jobs. They're nursing assistants, cooks, and software developers. Nearly one in five small businesses in the state were launched by immigrants, creating jobs for U.S.-born and new residents alike. The report also shows how immigration has led to better, not worse, wages for U.S.-born workers. I'm Eric Galatas.
And two specific types of cancer are showing up in high numbers among people in jail and prison. And Illinois is no exception.
The data found that diagnoses and mortality numbers for liver and lung cancer are more prevalent among county jails and state prisons. Lead author Dr. Xingshan Chow with the American Cancer Society says individuals may need to be transferred to outside facilities to receive cancer treatment, which is often denied or delayed, and that people with cancer and those behind bars share some characteristics or risk factors.
For liver cancer, some of the risk factors for developing liver cancer included hepatitis B and C, a healthy alcohol use, and we know that for lung cancer, smoking is a huge risk factor. And those factors are also very common among people who are currently incarcerated or with incarceration history.
She adds studies have shown that people are in Illinois state prisons, with another 17,000 in local jails. I'm Terry D. reporting.
Finally, next to Ohio, the impact of domestic violence continues to devastate families. We get the story from our Farah Siddiqui.
The Ohio Domestic Violence Network has released its 9th annual fatality report, revealing that 114 people, including 15 children, lost their lives to domestic violence in the past year. This includes incidents where victims were shot, strangled, or beaten, often while trying to leave their abuser. According to ODVN's legal counsel, Lisa DeGeeter, these victims were seeking help.
We continue to see victims, particularly parents, reach out for help to protect themselves and their children and not receive what is needed.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations. On your favorite podcast platform, find our content and trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.